And then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
Welcome back to another installment of Exfabula Story Stage U. I'm your host, Exfabula co-founder Leah Delaney. Exfabula connects storytellers with live audiences in Milwaukee. We provide a mic, a stage, and a theme for the night. You provide the stories. Many of those stories revolve around a moment of change or decision. And for this month's radio show, we found a few stories from several events when their moment was coming home. Anthony Umloff has told many a story at our Story Slam events. This particular story about coming home was pulled from the Second Thought Story Slam that was held at Sugar Maple last December.
All right, how you guys doing? Okay, well, as a kid, I always wanted a long-lost relative, and I ended up getting one. We found out I had like 20-something cousins from Chicago we never met. So we had like this family, not a reunion, it was a union. And I have a cousin who was like maybe 4 years older than me, so we used to party all the time. And well, I partied too much, but so I was going through a period of my life without a license, and me and my cousin, we used to go to the pubs a lot. So I rode my bicycle over to his house, which was a mile away, or about a mile and a half, and we had a few drinks at his house, and then we decided to go to the bar in his shit-kicking 4x4, which was like, you know, the frame lift and a body lift, and this thing was huge, and he was like really tall, so he didn't have any side steps, so I had to like jump to get in, use a ladder. But so we're going to all these different bars, and we closed them out, and then we, you know, he knew the ones that were open an extra hour later. Then we went there, then we went back to his house, and we polished off the last of the 24 case, and I was for schnooked, you know. So I'm like, all right, I gotta get back home. So I hop on my bicycle, and I'm just hauling ass down this hill. And it was a little town, so the cops didn't have too much to do. So you know, I see the lights go on, and I pull over to the side of the road. I'm like, I'm on a bicycle. This is a new experience for me. So he comes up, and I'm like, you know, pretending to roll down the window. He's like, can I see your license? And I'm like, okay. And I'm pretending to like open the glove box, and I pull my wallet out, and I give it to him. I'm like, can I ask you what I was doing? And he's like, well, have you been drinking? And I says, why do you think I'm riding a bicycle? You know? He's like, well, you can't ride a bicycle when you're drunk. I says, well, fine, I'll just walk my bicycle home. And he says, no, you can't do that either. There's public drunkenness. So I says, well, I'll crawl home. I've done that before. He's like, no, just throw the bike in the trunk. I'll drive you home. So I'm like, yeah, it's very nice of you. So we're riding home, and I was just, I was inebriated. And he's like, hey, you want to blow into the breathalyzer just to see how drunk you are? And I'm like, you know, I'm a criminal justice major. I know better than that. No. So, he's like, no, you know, he's like, come on, just for fun. I says, well, if I have your word, it's just for shits and giggles, you know, and you will not use it against me. Yeah, I suppose, why not? So he gives me a thing, and I'm breathing in it, and it was 0.32, and he's just shocked, his jaw drops. He's like, I can't believe you're holding on a conversation with me. Like, yeah, you should have been riding the bike back there. He says, well, you can't ride a bike without a light, I guess. I needed a headlight. But so he drove me home. I got home. I was actually living with my grandma. And I'm like, hey, can I turn on the lights and play with the siren? And yeah, he let me. And he had me in the back seat. I don't know. I guess he was worried for his safety or something. But I was pretty hammered. So I'm like, you know, I go around to the front, and I'm flipping on the lights and playing with the horn. And my grandma comes out. She's this old little Sicilian lady having a heart attack. You know, what'd you do? What'd you do? No. I says, no, he drove me home. She's like, that's not a good thing. I'm like, no, I got my bike in the trunk, so he helped me out. And, you know, on second thought, some cops ain't too bad.
That story was told by Anthony Umloff last December, where the theme was second thoughts. Sometimes coming home doesn't necessarily mean you're arriving at a geographical destination. Here's Amy Losey telling us about her travels back to a more centered spot in her life.
Okay, hi. I have a picture of me when I was getting married, and I'm walking down the aisle and I'm crying. And if you guys saw the picture, you would look at it and you would say, oh, look at her, she's crying, that's beautiful. But when I look at that picture, because I was there, I'm not crying, I'm crying. I am crying like a four-year-old girl cries when she gets out of her mother's car and is being led into the doctor's office because she knows she's gonna get a shot. I'm crying, okay? Because I never, ever should have walked down the aisle and married that man. I know. But let me tell you, I don't know very many people here tonight, and I know you guys probably don't know me as well, but I bet I can say that I am probably the only one here who was married to a right-wing Republican evangelical Christian engineer. And I was, for 15 years. And during the course of that marriage, I did a lot of things that were wrong, and he did a lot of things that were wrong as well. And it was interesting because we moved out here. We're from California, and we moved out here to Wisconsin. And around about the time we moved out here to Wisconsin, I remember we were sitting at in the auditorium for one of my son's concert, a recorder concert or band or something. I don't know what it was. And it was over, and my ex-husband, his name is Vance. Vance looked over at me, and he said, Amy, did you know that you were clapping louder than everybody else in this auditorium? And I was like... I guess I was, I was really excited, it was a great concert. He was kind of like, And I know, like I said, I don't know a lot of you, but I wouldn't consider myself to be a sentimental person, but I am a person who has a lot of feelings. I have huge, immense feelings. I feel things. I remember my sister said to me when she was like, Amy, you feel things really hard. And I do. I have hard feelings, you know, and I'm with this man who's telling me that I'm clapping louder than everybody else in the auditorium, and I think there's something wrong with that, and I don't know what's wrong. I can't figure it out, you know. So time goes by, and we go to this evangelical Christian church, and it has one of those rockin' contemporary worships. I love them. I love it. It's there's drums, there's guitar, there's cool contemporary Christian music, and I'm in church, and I'm doing my thing, and my ex-husband grabs me by my arm, and he says to me, Amy, do you realize that you are the only person who's dancing in this entire church? You're dancing in this entire church. And I'm like, I am? I was? Is there something wrong with that? I guess there is. There must be. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong. There's something wrong with that. And a little bit later, I'm standing in my laundry room, and I'm crying. And I'm really crying. And my ex-husband walks in, and he says to me, why are you crying? And I said, I'm really unhappy. I'm miserable. And he looked at me, and he said, Amy, you better get happy, because you have a lot of things to be happy about. And I thought, really? Do I? Well, okay, I must. And I don't know what they are, but they're there. Something, right? And I've got this Gap card, and it's sitting on my desk. I had a little desk in my kitchen. And he said, I want you to go use that Gap card. You know, this is like in May. I got it at Christmas. He's like, my mother gave it to you. She meant for you to use it. Go use it. Oh, I don't want to. And he's like, let's just go. Let's go. So we go to the Southridge Mall Gap. And I love the Gap. I'm like, I drop like $500-$600 at the Gap. I love the pocket t-shirt. I love it all. The chinos, everything. I've got the boyfriend chinos. Remember those? I've got them. I love it. So I walk into the Gap, and I've got my $50 Gap card. And he goes, choose something. Buy something. You know, what do you want? And I'm standing in the Gap, and I started to look around, and I realized there wasn't one thing in that Gap that I wanted, because I didn't have any idea of what I wanted. I didn't know. I didn't have any feelings left at all. And I started to cry. And I stood in the Gap at the Southridge Mall crying, holding that Gap card, and I realized that was my now moment. And I got the hell out of that marriage.
You just heard a story by Amy Losey at our event held last February where the theme was Now or Never. If you're just tuning in, I'm Leah Delaney, and Coming Home is the theme for today's radio stories from various Exfabulous Story Slams of this past season. The next Coming Home story was told by Marion X at one of our Guerrilla Story Slam events held at the Fondy Food Market this past September, when the theme was comfort food.
So I don't really have anything prepared exactly, but I grew up about a half mile from this market. This is the Fondy's Farmers Market. I usually go to Mitchell Street now because it's closer to my house. But this was the market where I learned about things that grow in the ground and how delicious they can be. And interesting little piece of trivia, they used to sell live chickens here. And you could either have them dispatch the chicken for you and pluck it and send you home with it. Or you could choose to do that yourself at home. So at some point in the 80s, they stopped doing that. And I was kind of disappointed because, you know, now they have like this lovely petting farm and I'm very excited to go check that out later. But, you know, I was also like a trip to the farm when you came here. So it was really great. But my parents felt very strongly about eating food that came from the ground. And I think that's something that this market and my parents really instilled in me. We would come here every Saturday, and my mom would bring friends from the neighborhood as well. So every Saturday she would come with May and Annie Mae, and Annie Mae ate a clove of garlic every day to ward off colds. But she lived to be like, I don't remember exactly, but she was in her late 90s. She was still very active until then. But we would come here and we would get our food. And my mom, she's a very passionate tomato eater. And I think that tomatoes for me embody summer because of that. So tomatoes, you would come here and you would get your wide variety of tomatoes and take them home and just eat them whole. One of my favorite things to eat as a child was a whole tomato with a nice smear of mayonnaise on it. It's the best thing ever. But this market also gave me a sense of that food should be about your community. This markets like this are normal in a lot of places in the world. Here, they're kind of, it's a movement and it's a new thing. This market's been here a really long time, and markets like it have existed for a really long time elsewhere in the world. So, you know, the experience of coming to this market prepared me for traveling, and that, I think, was probably one of the greatest gifts that it gave me, is the sense that I can be part of a community wherever I go. So when I was 20, my parents were like, go do something on your own. Kicked me out of the house and sent me to Ecuador for a summer. I didn't speak Spanish. I didn't know anyone. I'd never been away from them for more than like a week at a time. And they sent me to Ecuador and were like, have fun. And it wasn't like totally mysterious, like you're just gonna get off a plane. I was in a homestay. But one of the first things that I did with the family that I visited there, don't speak English or Spanish, and they don't speak English, was they took me shopping. And the market that we went to was close, the place that I was in the Andes Mountains, so we're in a valley, and this was at the north end of the city, and we lived at the south end, so we had to take the bus, which was kind of an interesting cross-cultural experience, because I take the bus here, but it's not like taking the bus in Ecuador. It's much more, there's not really a stop. You have to point if you want someone to stop. And we got there, and I got off, and I felt right at home right away. There were vendors with their wares all out in front of them, and, you know, even though I didn't understand what they were saying, they were, you know, here's a tomato, here's a potato, something that you know. Because food really is universal, even if it's different. Garlic in every cuisine you can think of. Onions, every cuisine you can think of. Potatoes come from the Andes. I'm Irish. I think that's mine, right? Nuh-uh. It comes from the Andes. So, you know, and I learned a lot of words that day, and I was like crying all day long because I was so nervous, and everything was different. But, you know, I got there, and here's a tomato. You know, and there's mayonnaise to be had. So it was that farmers markets and the people that bring food to them are a wonderful community of people. And for me, that's comfort food.
You just heard Marion X telling us about a coming home story at our Xfabula Gorilla Story Slam event themed Comfort Food last September at the Fondy Food Market. At one point in our lives, we have all searched for a new place to come home to. A woman named Bambi Grajek Spector tells us her story about this very thing at our Show and Tell Gorilla Story Slam event held at the Milwaukee Art Museum last August.
Somebody asked if I was going to be the object, because with a name like Bambi, it's usually a great story, but I've told it so many times, it's a little ho-hum for me. But it really made me think about, when you are asked to do a story about an object, what's that object? So I've had angst for days looking around my house after the flood in the basement, wondering what would be the object. And I found it this morning as I was getting dressed. Every morning I put this object on, and I've worn it for the last 11 years. I had a coworker with better eyesight than I do help me read the name inscribed. For a while, we thought the last name was Sterling, but then realized that, no, it's made of Sterling. But Gilbert B.J., Gilbert, is actually, after I Googled him for the first time today after 11 years, found out he's actually a talented Navajo silversmith. I saw him in passing as he was dropping this off at a trading post. In a small town in Arizona that's also the home of the Teepee Motel on Highway 66. So on Tuesday, January 12th, 1999, I took the package. $10 million were cut from payroll, and at the end of the day at 2 o'clock, after I did the Q&A for all the managers, wrote the speech for our CEO, I got the option of the package or demotion. I took the package. January and February at home is a little dark, so I Googled the sunniest cities in the United States to find a job in. Durango, Colorado, 86% of the time it's sunny. I started looking for jobs, sent out my resume, and then went to Match.com. planned my spring vacation in Colorado. Barry is a psychiatrist. He likes river rafting, lots of fun, beer, and had my first experience at stalking. I'm a little embarrassed about saying this. So it's cheap to fly to Phoenix, rent a car, look for a new place along the way, Prescott, Jerome, Sedona, Flagstaff, Four Corners, and ended up in Durango. Durango's a lovely town. I was there before Barbara Streisand bought a ranch, but already the property prices were going up. I found Barry's house pretty easily. After I saw his shades that were askew, really miskept house, I decided that I wouldn't call him or email him anymore. I walked past the places I had set up interviews for, called and canceled them, and realized that I'd have to work two jobs to live in a trailer house in Durango, Colorado, with 86% of the time being sunny. I made my way to Gallup and discovered Indian Pawn. I then stopped at every Indian pawn shop or trading post between Gallup and Flagstaff. And the last place I stopped was Route 66 in a little town where there's the teepee. There are three towns with teepee wigwam motels, one in California, one in Texas, and one in Arizona. I went into my last pawn shop. I had probably bought about five bracelets at this point, a number of rings and some earrings. Nothing of historical significance, but it amused me and kept me awake along the road. But Gilbert was in the back and he was delivering his wares. And I really struggled with the thought about Indians bringing in usually their best turquoise and jewelry for the most money for whatever they needed in their life. Gilbert had handmade things. He was kind of attractive. And I just asked if I could buy something from him directly. In 1999, I paid $19 for this sterling silver bracelet. So I'm telling you this story today is that I realized as I was looking for an object sitting in my office upstairs in the concrete bunker where there's no art. Now I do have a picture. That I've worn this every day, and it reminded me of the conscious choice I made as we take that road down life and you have these options of turning off, that instead of living in Durango, Colorado, I've ended up here in Milwaukee. And I'm not sure about Barry, but I'm having a great time. Thank you.
You just heard Bambi Grodzik Spector telling us about a coming home story recorded at our Exfabula Gorilla Story Slam event named Show and Tell last August at the Milwaukee Art Museum. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to Exfabula Radio, and today's theme is coming home. We're going to wrap up today's show with a poignant story from Bo Johnson about, you guessed it, coming home.
So, I really wanted to tell a positive story tonight, but I was having a terrible time trying to come up with something positive based on Busted. Until I opened my refrigerator the other day and I remembered how I got this. It was early last December on a weeknight, and I had just opened a show that I had produced myself. And that takes a lot of work. So it had been 2 months of nothing but stress. And prior to that, I had been working all year long on bringing my house up to code compliance because the city is on my ass, right? So for 11 months, I had been living 24/7 nonstop stress. And on this night in early December, I finally felt like I was done. The show was opened. I could sit and relax on the couch with my dog and watch a movie and drink and just not care. I didn't even want to cook, and I love to cook. But instead, I called out for a pizza from a pickup place called Sal's on Wisconsin Avenue. It's between Marquette University and my neighborhood. My neighborhood is where Marquette kids go to buy their drugs from, from the dealers and pimps that live next door to me. But Sal's is a very nice place, and it's run by this immigrant couple from, I think, Poland, or Eastern Europe somewhere based on their accent, and they're always really nice to me. So I walked into Sal's that night, and I was early. So the guy by the oven said, oh, you're going to have to sit and wait. So I sat down, and there was nobody else in the place except for this man and woman at a table next to me. And they were from my neighborhood, not Marquette. And a lot of people in my neighborhood have lost the battle to their addictions. And you can always tell who they are because there's this constant energy coming out of them. You know, this, that, and I don't have to put up with that kind of shit. And these two people were a very good example of that. So I had to listen to it for about a minute, and then the guy stood up and stumbled past me and went out into the night. Now, the woman was going to take the time to bus her table, except because she was drunk, as she stood up, she slammed into it, and the garbage on the table fell onto the floor, with the exception of a napkin crumpled in her hand. And she looked and saw me and knew that I was watching, and she was busted. And I saw the look on her face. What do I do right now to maintain what little dignity I have left? And bending over and picking up garbage in her condition was not the answer. So she picked up her head, and she sauntered past me with a, I don't have to pick up any kind of garbage attitude, and she was gone. And I was alone in Sal's, and I thought two things. First, I thought, I feel sorry for that woman. And second, I thought, there's really no reason to just let garbage sit on the floor like that. So I, no one else was around. I leaned over quietly out of my chair and picked up the plates and crusts and napkins and threw them in the garbage can in the corner and then sat back down and waited. And a little while later, the guy back by the ovens called out, my pizza was ready. I went to the register and I paid for it and threw a buck in the tip jar, and I turned around towards the door with it, and there was this waving in my face, and Sal holding on to it, and he looked me in the eye and he said, here, sir, for you. You have happy holidays. And he had busted me, you see. He saw me doing something that I didn't think anyone had watched. And I have to tell you, I was actually very moved at that moment. After 11 months of feeling nothing but beaten down, suddenly I was in the last minute of a Frank Capra movie.
And all I could say was, thank you so much. And I started to tear up and got embarrassed and ran out. And I went home and put this in my refrigerator where it has sat for 2 months because you know what? I don't drink soda. So now that I have told this story, anybody who would like it, I'm sitting at that table back there. Thank you.
That was Bo Johnson telling his story the night the Story Slam was themed Busted, held at the Hi-Hat Garage. We're pretty excited to announce that Xfabula's fall season will be starting back up on Wednesday, October 13th at the Stonefly Brewery in River West, where the theme will be Confessions. What you were just listening to is just a sampling of the range of stories that emerge from people like you at an Xfabula storytelling event. If you want to tell a story or be a part of our supportive audience, head over to xfabula.com for a complete listing of all our events this fall and winter season. Hopefully, we'll see you on the stage or in the seats in the next coming weeks. My name is Leah Delaney, and I would like to thank you for tuning in to Xfabula Radio, not only today, but throughout the entire summer. Xfabula Radio was produced and edited by Xfabula co-founders Leah Delaney and Amy Schleicher, along with Jeremy Kuzniar, Tom Crawford, and Ryan Schleicher of WMSE. For more information on Xfabula storytelling and details of upcoming events, head over to xfabula.com. This has been a collaborative project between Xfabula and 91.7 WMSE Frontier Radio.